Okay, so this sermon is called Loving Our Neighbors With Our Words. One of the things my family has been doing while we've all been back together for COVID has been reading through this devotion by Tim Keller on Proverbs. And one of the sections that we read was on words and the impact and influence of our words on other people. And I've really been meditating on that because I talk a lot and I read a lot, and so words are a very big part of who I am and what my gifts and callings are in life. And I think a lot about what I've said and what I'm going to say, and so it really resonated with me. And I've also been thinking a lot about Joey's sermon series on the Ten Commandments, and especially on this other side, not the obvious Sunday school answer kind of stuff, but the little nuances and the broader implications of each commandment, especially with the New Testament spin that Jesus gives in Matthew, where loving God and loving your neighbor isn't just the written law that's that checklist, as Joey said earlier, of the Ten Commandments, but it's so much more and so much broader and deeper. And so I really want to look at a specific Proverbs passage, Proverbs 15. So a little bit later we can all turn to that, but I wanted to look at Proverbs 15 and meditate on somehow some of this the Proverbs tell us to love our neighbors using our words. For me especially, I have so many times where my words have been thoughtless and careless, and they've expressed something that was clearly not from God, and a lot of it comes from pride or anger or jealousy or some other desire or sinful nature, and it's really stuck with me and really resonated, and I've thought and regretted a lot of those words deeply. And I wanted to think, how do we as a people of Christ get our hearts and our minds in the right place so that our words aren't coming from places of anger or jealousy or any of the other things that the Ten Commandments are talking about, but are coming from a place of love and truth and wisdom. So thinking towards the Ten Commandments again, in Matthew 22, Jesus talks about the great commandment, where you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and mind, and words are of course included in that, and you shall love your neighbors as yourselves. So I was thinking, often there's kind of the Old Testament version of the commandments as this checklist, this passive thing where it's you shall not. It's you separate yourself from the sin or the act or the desire that's forbidden in the commandment. And to be righteous, you live a life separate from those things. It's a very passive way of looking at the Ten Commandments. You want to be completely separate and apart from these sins, and therefore you are righteous. But Jesus in Matthew is calling out that that passive way of looking at this checklist or these rules doesn't work. Because in Matthew 5, as Joey has talked about quite a few times, 5:21, you have heard that the ancients were told, you shall not commit murder, and whoever commits murder shall be liable to the court. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother shall be guilty before the court, and whoever shall say to his brother, Raha, shall be guilty before the Supreme Court, and whoever shall say, you fool, shall be guilty enough to go into a fiery hell. Now, it's a lot easier to distance yourself from a murder and from those distinct acts that are laid out in the commandments. You shall not commit adultery, you shall not commit murder. It's a lot easier to say passively, oh, I've never done those things, therefore I'm fulfilling the commandments. It's a lot harder to say, oh, I've never said you fool, I've never been angry for a bad reason with my neighbor. And Jesus is calling out that we can't passively go through life and become righteous through just not doing these things, the Ten Commandments. We have to actively approach the Ten Commandments as a lifestyle, living through Christ and through the Holy Spirit to fulfill the lifestyle that will fulfill the Ten Commandments. We have to actively pursue it instead of passively staying away from what we're not supposed to do. And so thinking about this with our words, because our words are the most smallest and easiest and most superfluous parts of our speech. They come out all the time, and as far as actions go, that the first thing's out and the smallest and easiest things both to mess up and to change. And so because of the most common action that we take, I wanted to look at how we could do small things to start actively living out the Ten Commandments with our words. So turning to Proverbs 15. My Bible titles this passage as a contrast of the upright and the wicked. So each proverb has kind of a duality of what the righteous words would look like and what unrighteous words look like. So starting with 15:1. A gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. I had so many times this week where I would come down to the kitchen for breakfast and one of my siblings would be grumpy and they would snap at me, and I realized that usually I would snap back. But because I was thinking about this passage, I realized, oh, if I don't snap back, there's no argument, there's no conflict, and suddenly we can both go on our day and everything goes so much better. And I've been thinking, so many of our conflicts and the problems and our divisions between us and our neighbors start because both parties choose to engage in the conflict. You can't have an argument if one person refuses to argue, but it's just so natural and easy to get into that argument. When someone wrongs you, you feel like you need to justify yourself and re-wrong them back and get revenge. But what this proverb is saying is that a gentle answer turns away wrath. And thinking again, Joey talked about how polarized our country is. Part of that polarization is that when one side says something, the other side automatically has to say the complete opposite thing. And that creates tension, that creates arguments. A gentle answer is the complete opposite of that. And a gentle answer has to come from a place of humility. It has to come from a place of loving your neighbor. And for example, I'm going to use the Sixth Commandment because it's kind of the most obvious parallel, but to actively fulfill the Sixth Commandment means not just not murdering somebody, but it means giving through humility a gentle answer that negates harm, negates anger. If anger doesn't ever start, the quarrel never starts, then the hate and the intent that leads to the Sixth Commandment being broken never happens. And so a living through a Christian way, fulfilling the Sixth Commandment, means loving our neighbors and humbly diffusing and making peace instead of continuing arguments and quarrels. I think the best example is like a big mob. If you think like, say, Mark Antony and Julius Caesar, where he gets up in front of the mob, and they're not that mad about Julius Caesar's death, but with his words, he inflames them to the point where they turn on the people that killed Caesar and drive them out of town. Just simple words stir up anger, but gentle answers are so powerful in keeping things like mobs and revolutions and riots, for example, which is very topical for today, from getting out of hand and from creating the chaos and the anger and the hate that they do. So moving on to 15:2 and 15:3. The tongue of the wise makes knowledge acceptable, but the mouth of fools spouts folly. The eyes of the Lord are in every place, watching the evil and the good. Now, words are not just an external thing, but they're a way for us to see what's inside. Words are often the most easiest tangible thing to see what our heart's doing, what's going on. Sometimes it's really hard to think what we're actually feeling, and we can keep ourselves in a rut where we think what's going on is what's actually going on, but then our words don't match our thoughts, or our words don't match what we think we should be doing, we think we are. And there's something about our words that deeply represents and deeply expresses what's in our heart. And these two verses are getting at that. It's really interesting how 2 talks about what's coming out of our mouths, that the wise have knowledge coming out and that the fools are fools because folly comes out of their tongues. And then it contrasts that quickly with 3, where it's talking about the Lord is having his eyes in every place. And that reminds me of the passage from 1 Samuel, where it talks about the Lord looking at the heart. The Lord sees what's in our hearts, and even when we don't, and we can see what's in our hearts by what comes out of our lips, what comes out of our tongues. Uh, 15:4. A soothing tongue is a tree of life, but the perversion in it crushes the spirit. We haven't gotten there quite yet in our series, but the ninth commandment is kind of the obvious commandment if we're thinking about our words and our tongues. Lying is very associated with speaking. And Joey will talk about it next week, but lies are often ways in which we either tear other people down or cover ourselves up or tear down our integrity and our internal righteousness. They're tools of destruction, and they often pervert and destroy things instead of creating life and soothing, being soothing. But words aren't just ways we can tear people down or destroy things. They're also, as in this passage shows, ways to create things, to exhort people, to encourage people, and to build them up. There's so many times in my life where I've had a little experience with someone that I didn't know very well, but being able to sit down with them and speak words of truth and life into their lives has been just an amazing experience and has really blessed them. It's not a big act. You're not doing a lot for them, but it's really powerful when you've sat down and maybe you've prayed a little bit and you're able to speak words of life from God to people. And it can do amazing things, and it can lead to amazing relationships later down the road. And I think this is a really good example of how we love our neighbors, how we actively fulfill the Ten Commandments in the scope of this ninth commandment. Not lying and fulfilling the ninth commandment means using our words to build people up and to exhort and encourage, because the best way to combat lies is with the truth. And as Christians, we should speak the truth in love to better the world. And the power and the consequences of that are so powerful and so life-giving that they can counteract the lies and deception that kind of permeate our fleshly existence. Going on to 15:5 and 15:6. Much wealth is in the house of the righteous, but the trouble is in the income of the wicked. I'm sorry, I skipped 5. A fool rejects his father's discipline, but he who regards reproof is prudent. And then the much wealth is in the house of the righteous, but trouble is in the income of the wicked. This two passages remind me a lot of the fifth commandment, especially because right now I'm kind of transitioning out of my parents' house into the bigger world. And so for me, following advice and following their wise words is kind of the number one way that I interact with them. And I think this is really important because following advice is a very active way of using words to do things like honor our fathers and mothers, but also to live a Christian life. We can use not just our words, but other people's words to build ourselves up and to grow. And often what we're experiencing isn't the biggest picture, and we need other words and other guidance to see exactly what's going on, and we don't have the full picture. And also, just the literal word itself, the Bible, is God's words as well, and so there's that layer too of his advice. How do we take his advice and live it out through our lives to fulfill the Ten Commandments? And it was interesting that there's this passage about how there's much wealth in the house of the righteous, and then looking back at the fifth commandment, where it talks about you will live long in the land the Lord has given you, that there's this blessing that comes with following good advice, because you're naturally fulfilling the Lord's ways, and so the Lord is able to bless you because you're allowing him to lead and you're taking his advice, and so your life is going to go better because of it. And then 15:7, the lips of the wise spread knowledge, but the hearts of the fools are not so. Again, this is, you know, that similar idea of spreading life and truth instead of lying. But When I was reading this verse, I thought about the fact that as Christians, we often have this tendency to think all about how we as human beings are not living up, and it's very inward looking, and then thinking about the fact that Jesus calls us to go out and spread the good news. Being a Christian is not passive and looking inward, but it's very active. It's about spreading the gospel to the world. And just like fulfilling the Ten Commandments is an active pursuit of living righteously and not just keeping yourself separate from these lists of rules, but actively fulfilling all of them, so is spreading the gospel. It's an active pursuit of talking to people and spreading knowledge, spreading truth, spreading wisdom with our lips. It's so hard as Christians to live in a society where we're often seen as having all these taboos and rules and things that we don't approve of, and it feels very negative. It's like being a Christian is very restrictive. You're not allowed to do this, you're not allowed to do that, you shouldn't do this. But what it really is living a very guided life, and that to live a righteous life is living the life God has given you. And instead of being restricted, we're living in a way that follows His heart and His goal for our lives. And so it's a very active calling of living righteously. It's not restricting yourself and saying, I can't do this because I'm a Christian. It's saying, I choose to do this and live this way because I'm a Christian. And it might not seem in words like that's a big difference, but it makes a huge difference for our model and for our spirits and for our motivations in life, because it's so much more freeing and so much more inspiring to live a life where you're choosing to do something because it's righteous, because it's the way that you know that God is calling you to live, versus saying, I can't do this because I am being restricted, because it's wrong. 15:8. The sacrifice of the wicked is an abomination to the Lord, but the prayer of the upright is His delight. So I've been talking mostly about loving our neighbors, and this the way this, the kind of the cross way of looking at the great commandment, where it's loving other people and then loving God. But 15:8, here's another quick one to touch on that part of loving God. When it talks about the prayer of the upright is God's delight. Worship and prayer is such a huge, important part of being Christians. And loving God with our words is literally worshiping Him and giving Him the ability, giving Him the blessings and praise from our hearts through our lips. And it's a good way of self-monitoring what's coming out of our lips when we're praying and we're worshiping God, because that's what's in our heart. It talks here about how the sacrifice of the wicked is an abomination to the Lord. And it reminded me of the Cain and Abel story. Both of them are worshiping God with their sacrifices, but Abel's heart is in the right place, and so his words are pleasing to God, and his sacrifice is pleasing to God. Cain, while his words and his sacrifice might be, in theory, worshiping God, clearly his heart is not in the right place, because God sees his sacrifice as not sufficient and doesn't accept it. And for us, this is a cautionary thought and a warning that our worship can't just come from here. It has to come from our heart and through our lips. And it's really meaningful to realize that even our small worship and our small prayers are so important to monitor and to see where our heart is and where we're placing our importance and our faith. And so wrapping up, for me, this was a really deep look into all the times that what comes out of my mouth isn't what's supposed to come out, all the times that pride or anger or jealousy is in there, and I'm not even thinking about it, but it comes out quickly without me meaning to or me thinking that's going to. But it reminds me that there's all these small things deep in here that aren't in line with the Ten Commandments, that aren't in line with loving my neighbor. But at the same time, words are not a huge undertaking. They're very easy both to mess up on, but they're also fairly easy on the grand scale to do right. And I wanted to encourage everyone that loving our neighbors can start very simply with speaking truth, speaking life through our words, and that fulfilling the Ten Commandments starts very simply at expressing our hearts and expressing what the Holy Spirit moves through us through our words. So yeah, that's it.